what would someone in that position who would be the Australia's best, what would they do? And then I'm going to like sort of practice being successful when you're without, meaning that you may not be there, but you need to practice like you're there. You need to be that person. So studying the sport, you know, asking questions from different coaches, could be the right thing, could be the wrong thing, talking to athletes, collecting information. And all I knew that in order for me to achieve that goal, I just had to take action. And I was just like, sometimes it was the wrong action, but it had to be something. So I had to always find something, always had to have a conversation. And then I had to find the competitive edge.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Bro and a Pro podcast, where we hope to help you reach your full potential, whether that be inside or outside the gym. I'm your main host, Jeremy Self, self-proclaimed gym bro. And today we have a very special guest. He is Australia's number one bikini coach, Troy Jane Thornton from Team Des Troy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, brother. It's a pleasure to be here. And I want to know, how'd you come up with your name, by the way?
I'm a bro. Nicole's a pro. That's how we kind of started, eh? And I started thinking, I was like, hey, I am what you call a gym bro. Thank you for asking the question. I think some people don't actually know why we call it the Bro and the Pro podcast. Is because I am a gym bro. I am that guy that, you know, used to compete in the past. You know, I'm that guy that's like, oh, I used to compete back in my day. You know, you know how you get those guys inside the gym who generally go and be like, oh yeah, I used to compete back then. So I'm kind of like, I feel like I represent all the gym bros out there.
Yeah, but you're a high level experienced gym bro though.
Not too high level. I'm not a pro. So therefore I'm still a gym bro.
Yeah, I feel you. I like it. It's really cool.
Yeah. So that way I can get professionals like yourself. You are a pro coach, being that you have just currently sent one of your clients to Olympia, as well as you have created a ton of pros in Australia as well.
Yes. Alex, first bikini Olympian. So that was really cool to go over there to watch the Olympia. Not only just my first Olympia experience was 2016. And that was probably when I was more bodybuilding focused. Like I was more of a fan of like, hey, who's going to win the open bodybuilding? So it was really cool to go from that perspective to I'm more interested in bikini. So 2016, 2022, big difference in 6 years.
Yeah. And I guess like, you know, obviously it just grows. It's an ever-growing kind of sport. And I just want to ask you though, so when you started like your whole journey, like, you know, becoming the number one, Australia's number one bikini coach, how did you become Australia? When did you decide that I love this division and I'm going to go all in into it?
Yeah, so it was interesting. I didn't really like bikini to begin with. So I've mentioned this before, and I was more of a hardcore bodybuilding fan. So I used to watch all the pro shows, or just to be on muscledevelopment.com and look in the forums and be completely obsessed with like, all right, this is the pro show, Chicago pro show. Oh, Justin Compton's competing. And if someone asked me a question about bodybuilding, I would be able to tell them, you know, who competed in what pro show, what they placed in every pro show for that year, just only for the men's categories. And Tony and I, like I used to work back at the Arnold office, and Tony Doherty and I would have discussions about the bodybuilding. It was the coolest thing ever. And then I sort of like knew bikini was there, and I was just like, eh, I don't really know much about it. I find it kind of boring, you know, which sounds very odd to say that now. But I gained an interest in it because I had a girlfriend at the time who was interested in competing, and she said, hey, you know, I'd like to compete. Can you prep me? And I was like, okay, like I'm happy to help, like obviously, but I've got to figure out a lot of things. So I was like, all right, I need to get down to the basics. Like I need to figure out what the posing's like. I need to research the category because I didn't really have an interest in it until she mentioned that. I was like, all right, I must like learn about it. So it started from there. And because she was really serious about her training and her nutrition, I was like, I need to take this seriously as well because she really wants to do well. She wants to win. She had a really good result, came in really good condition. And because of that, that sparked the interest of people going, hey, like, you know, she actually looked really good. What did you do differently? Da, da, da. Do you coach? I'm like, nah, I just did this for fun. It was one of those things where I was like, yeah. And then a few people started bugging me and say, hey, listen, would you be willing to coach me? And I was like, nah, I don't really want to do that. I was a personal trainer beforehand. At this point in time, I was actually working at the Arnold office, so the Arnold Classic Australia, where, you know, they used to have the Arnold Expo for anyone that's listening. And Tony used to put on the Arnold Classic Australia for, you know, bring out pro bikini, bring out pro bodybuilders, the works, which is really cool. So I used to work in the expo office, and I was like, yeah, this is my full-time gig. I'm doing sales and marketing. I don't really want to be a prep coach. But a few people started bugging me, and I was like, yeah, okay, I'll help you because you seem like you're really serious. And I really enjoyed ladies that were like really committed and serious. That's why I was like, yeah, cool, I'll help my partner at the time. And then what happened was, is that I started attracting like ladies that were really serious, that were really wanting to go, you know, to go to the next level. And for me, it was really fun to help them. So at that point in time, I was just like, yeah, I'll help you. And I was like, I don't want to charge anyone because I don't want to have the obligation to say that I like to be completely committed. You know, if someone's not putting in effort, I was like, no, I don't want to coach you. So I was coaching probably maximum of like maybe 5-6 competitors at the time, but I had like, you know, like I had 2 or 3 pros. So I was very selective with who I was working with. And for me, because they were completely committed, they had clear goals, I was like, yeah, I'm going to do this. And then eventually, I don't know what happened. I suppose my perspective changed on, there's so many people that were pushing me and going, hey, listen, you should do this full time. You're really good at it. And I was like, yeah, no, not really. Da, da, da. And then I can't recall what the exact moment was where I had that transition of, you know what, I actually do want to do this. And then I was like, I need to set myself a goal. And I was like, if I'm going to do this, what do I want to achieve? Because I'm an all or nothing type of guy. That's why I was sort of complacent about like, I can be really chill and I can help people, but I don't want a commitment like long term. So I was like, all right, what do I want to do? I'm like, you know what? If I want to do this, I need to be like the best at it. So I want to be Australia's best bikini coach. So in my mind, that's what I wanted. And I looked at who the coaches were at that particular point in time. And I was like, shit, you know, I can't really claim that. I'm like, I got to beat these guys, but these guys are really good. They've got a lot of experience, you know, both really strong bodybuilding coaches, as well as, you know, I would say decently strong bikini coaches or just female coaches in general. I was like, damn, I knew that I was capable of a lot, but I knew that I had a lot to prove, not just to myself, but to others. And I thought, all right, let's just go. Let's start the process. So for me, it was all about setting the goal and going, I don't know exactly what the process is to get there, but I'm going to get there. Like I had to believe it in my heart wholeheartedly. And I did. I was like, this is exactly what I want and I'm going to get the job done. So that started the process of me saying, yeah, I'm going to take on clients. And because I was saying no to so many people, the people that were ready to work with me, they're like, oh my God, Troy's doing coaching now. Cool. So then I started accepting ladies at that time. Sometimes, you know, you accept clients that I realized very quickly that not everyone is dedicated to some of the ladies I was working with. So that was a bit of a learning experience where I was like, oh, I actually got to tailor my coaching. And back then I was very, I don't know, I had a different approach. I was very, very sharp and let's call it masculine in my communication. Probably still have that element now, but a little bit softer in my approach where I can communicate differently, but to be very aggressive in my communication, very sure of myself. And I had to learn to communicate in a different way to get the outcome that I wanted with clients that weren't as dedicated or didn't have the bar set as high. So that was a really cool learning experience. So that all stemmed from that point where I was like, I've got an opportunity here. I see a gap in the market. I want to be the best. And then I suppose I just started the process.
Yeah. And so like this passion you had with just being the best, I guess, like turned into a business. And so prior to like starting all of this, so you were PT and everything like that, were you doing anything else like business wise, or was it just like PT full time and then working also like marketing for the Arnolds? Obviously, this was during the time when before the split happened, correct? So
PT, I started PTing in 2011 because I competed in 2010. That was my first ever contest. I competed in A and B.
I remember you competed in, actually. I do recall that. Yeah.
So yeah, I did that. And the year that I competed, I did a PT course. So that was 2010. And then 2011, I started working in the gym and I was personal training and just working sort of just general gym hours. And and then I sort of didn't have the passion at that point in time for personal training. I was probably more so focused on men. Or obviously you work with any clients that are willing to work with you, but I think the issue that I had, the bottleneck that I had, or the roadblock, was that I didn't work with people that were passionate. It was more so the general lifestyle people. And for me, that wasn't fulfilling. So if I'm going to give a lot of my energy to someone, whether it's mental or even if I'm communicating in a certain way, I want to get that back. And for me, that's what's fulfilling. And that's why, you know, when I started coaching, I was like bikini athletes, I worked with ladies that were really passionate, that were really inspired and ready to go, because that was fulfilling for me. So working with clients like that was my number one priority. That's why I was like, I've got to be very selective with who I work with. But back then when I was personal training, I was going through that process of discovery where I realized that not everyone is super passionate. Not everyone is ready to get after their goal. And I found that really mentally challenging to enjoy the role when you knew that that client was probably not going to do everything and they're going to have their beers on the weekend, or they just cheat on their diet, or, you know, when you're not doing a personal training session with them, they're going to slack off or they'll miss a few days. And I'm just like, how is it possible that people do this? You know, so I went through that transition phase. I worked in the Arnold office, actually. So after that, I worked in the Arnold office for, I did three Arnold Australias. So the Arnold Australia, for everyone that's listening, is this was on once a year. And I did one Arnold Asia. So that was cool. And while I was in the office, yeah, like I said, I was working with people just on the side. I was also working with men then too. So for the dudes that were just like, hey, like I want to, you know, I want some help, yada, yada. I was like, okay, cool. Like I'm happy to help you. I did the same thing with some guys as well. So I wasn't just working with ladies at the time, but it was very, again, very selective with the men that I was working with. But well, so now I'm going on a rant. So what was the original question?
Yeah, so you just you turned your passion into a business, and obviously, like, I'm more talking about like when you started. Like, I guess, yeah, I guess the tangent put me off as well. I was just kind of like thinking, like, where do we go after? I was just enjoying listening to your story in itself. I guess, like, you know, with your business now, you know, a lot of people do struggle with, you know, how did you decide to narrow down on working with passionate people only, as well as, you know, you kind of went in and decided, I only want to work with passionate people, correct? Or, yeah. And then now you are, would you say that you still currently work with people who probably are not passionate, or do you help them change that switch in their mindset to actually become more, more of a gun in that essence? Yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So my approach has changed. So when I decided to go full time with it, I was like, I need to change my approach, and I've got to figure out ways to motivate people or to keep them accountable. And I didn't have all the right answers. I was like, I still need to figure that out. And sometimes I'm still figuring it out, because not everyone, you know, everyone has a different personality. Everyone has different goals and needs. It's like if someone's, let's say, operating, if my 10 out of 10 is someone else, like if my 5 out of 10 is someone else's 10 out of 10, I've got to recognize that and adapt. And I've got, okay, I need to figure out a way to get them from a 5 to a 6, you know, and that for me is what I've really focused on. So it depends on their goal. So whatever their goal is, it's very important for me to see what the client's goals are and then go, okay, I need to push them that little bit further. You know, are they doing everything that they can to head towards there? And generally speaking, it's probably a mindset thing, and it's a support. It's probably a, there's probably a big level of support that's required for the everyday client, or let's say the average client. So for me now, it's about what I can do to help them go to the next level for them. So if it's going from a 5 to a 6, but that 5 to 6 could be their 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10, that's their 100% effort. So if they're giving their best effort at the time, that's all I care about. And I like to see their progress in their psychology and their mindset, their belief system, and how they feel about themselves.
And I think that comes down to communication. Communication is such a huge factor. To be a great coach, you need to communicate things across. And obviously, you know, in your aspect, you are making people who are already really good better. And the people who need to be up to that level, you're helping them make that transition, you know, and whether that be mindset and stuff like that. And so do you have any like things you kind of live by in regards to how do you get someone who's just an average person to that next level? Like, what do you do to help encourage them to become better?
So I think open communication is very important for a coach and client. But I think first and foremost is the goal setting. So it's like, if someone's losing a bit of motivation, or if they're not as disciplined that week, you've got to revisit their goal and go, okay, what is your why? Like, why are you doing this? You know, what is it you want to achieve? And I like to sort of talk about, you know, I problem solve in a way where I'm like, okay, how can I get the most out of them? I'm like, visualization always works well for me. So I then start to remind them, okay, what is the goal that you want to achieve? What do you want to look like? How is it going to feel when you look like that? You know, I want that for you. You know, I know that you're capable of it. So giving them that visualization element, giving them that support and going, hey, listen, I know that you've got the potential, you've got it in you. I just want to see you give that little bit more. And that statement can really help push a client across the line, because sometimes people don't have the greatest self-esteem. They don't have the best confidence. And I've realized now, so more than ever, as I progress in my coaching, the support element side is very, very important, because I've always had the knowledge, I believe, but I'm still working on the support factor and the communication. And that's something that I can still improve on as a coach, to really go like, how can I take these skills to the next level? That's what I think about. And I look at things like from the average client point of view, or even someone, let's say like Nay's doing a pro show. She's doing the Japan pro show coming up shortly. And I even think about, you know, what does Nay need for her to be successful? And I've changed my approach, how I prepped her for this show from a psychological point of view, the communication compared to last time, but my experience, my level of knowledge is probably the same, but just communication is different.
That's so important. I think, you know, what you're doing there is you are passionate in helping people become better, and that communication is so important. So you are almost like setting someone a goal and then you're attaching emotion to these goals. I tell people, I'm like, you've got to, like, how would this make you feel achieving this goal? So if you want to be a pro in Australia, like, how would that make you? You have to visualize that, right? Like, you have to practice visualization. Is this something you kind of practice on yourself as well?
Yeah. So what I like to do is I've got a book here. This is my, it kind of looks like a Bible. Yeah. So I
love it.
I write down, I write down my goals in it. And, I print out, over here as well. I've got a performance review that a daily review at the end of the day. And I have a list of questions that I it's like a self-evaluation checklist, and go, you know, what is something that I can improve on for tomorrow? What opportunity did I miss today? And I can write it from a professional sense, from a personal sense as well, because it's very easy when you're heavily business focused. And I've done a big problem in the past where I was completely focused on business, not necessarily the personal side of things and being social, etc. So I think that you can reflect on your performance in relationships, in business, in your social life, in your health, in your own training, nutrition. So it's important to have that reflection. And I'm a big advocate of that. So if you're reflecting on your performance, whether it's daily, whether it's weekly, you're going to create a different level of self-awareness, and you're going to have the opportunity to level up and step up and then take action.
That's amazing. And I think I'm going to have to use that skill. I think it's something that it's so important that other people don't do a self-performance review. And I think doing that in your relationships, and it's not just about business. You're definitely someone who has come into the industry just all or nothing. Like, you are the, like, no bullshit guy. Like, I've been listening to your podcast for a while now. And so, like, I know that you've always been like, you know, you don't take bullshit. You want to give it just straight raw facts. This is going to be an unedited podcast. We're going to give it all. And I think that's so important too. So how did you go from giving it your all in your business to finding that balance? Like, because obviously you probably have a shit ton of clients, right?
Yeah. Balance. Yeah. Like, actually, I think I wrote down something. Yep. This is in my, let's call it my goal book, right? This is probably not everyone's cup of tea, but let's just get to it. So there is no such thing as work-life balance. You have work-life choices and they have consequences. So that pretty much it. That really sums me up really, really well. And it's true. So anything that you decide to do, something's going to have to give. So if you're completely all in with your business, your relationships, your social life, possibly your health, your fitness is going to give. So just as being a professional athlete, if you're all in for a professional athlete, I don't think someone like Usain Bolt, you know, is very social. You know, I don't think that anyone that has strived for greatness or to have big, audacious goals does have that balance. So it just depends on what is important to you as an individual. And for me, I realize that I neglected different areas of my life, and that's something that I'm still managing. So I don't have all the answers, but I'm aware that I need to improve on the social side of things and other things I'm working on as well.
Yeah. And was that the thing that kind of tip of the iceberg where you decided to move to Dubai, or was it for more business opportunities?
Dubai was, it was definitely personal growth. It was definitely business opportunities. I think that anytime you step outside your comfort zone, it's scary, right? I was like, oh, I'm going to move to Dubai by myself, right?
You stopped and left.
Yeah. And I was like, damn, that's scary. Because I was like, I've got no one to rely on. And it was interesting coming here originally. I had some very, very interesting things that happened. And I was like, wow, this is all testing. And I'm like, I love it. I'm like, harden up. Like, and I just thought to myself, if I can handle this, I can handle anything. So it really helped create a new level of mental strength for me where, you know, I could not be emotional to the situation. I could be rational and I could rely on myself. And I developed this level of confidence and let's call it self-esteem that I didn't have before, because I don't know. I just, for lack of a better word, I hardened up over here, and it was the best thing that's ever happened to me. So I think if you're doing the same thing all the time, whether it's your fitness, whether it's, it doesn't matter whatever type of goal or what are your daily actions, if you're not challenging yourself, you're probably going to be the same person who you were last week or the same person who you were last year. So for me, there was an opportunity to seek more personal growth. And I was like, you know what? Let's just do it. It's kind of scary. Let's just see where it goes. And I'm glad that I did it. It was best decision I made.
You're someone that I think continuously keeps growing and leveling up. And I think I want to ask you the question though, like when do you get to a point that you're satisfied? Is there ever going to be a point where you're like, you know what? I'm happy. Like, where am I? Or is there something you're learning right now? It's a question I ask only because I guess I would relate in some way that I want to keep, you know, you want to keep growing in every way, you know, whether that be, you know, upskilling your skill set, growing your business, you know, helping clients achieve their goals, the whole lot. How do you get to a point where you're like, you know what, I'm kind of a bit happy? Or do you think that's a form of getting comfortable and, you know, you don't want to get into a comfort zone?
It depends what you define as happiness. So are you talking about happiness within yourself?
Yes.
So yeah, like I wake up happy every day. So I think that is, there are some moments that can be like, you can have challenging days, right? That you might go, wow, like I'm upset today, I'm angry or whatever happens, that's normal. But for my general sort of energy, how I feel, I wake up and I'm happy and excited to start the day. It's not like, damn, I've got to. The only thing that I don't like doing is actually going to the gym and training. Apart from that, I'm.
Even though you preach it, yeah, and I get your feel like training is probably the hard part. And yeah. Eating your meals, you know, eating 5 or 6 meals, we're like, yeah, you got to preach it. You know, you got to eat this many meals a day and, you know, for the protein synthesis. And you're just like, fuck, I can't even get that shit.
Yeah. And it's funny because people are like, what are you talking about? Like, I just sort of let my physique go. And I'm like, I need to get back into the gym. So I was like, I didn't have a goal to associate myself with like the idea of getting back in shape. I was like, okay, I need to actually be very specific and concise with the goal. I'm like, all right, this is, and I started thinking about exactly what we were talking about before, visualization. What do I want to look like? What do I want to achieve? And when I feel like being a lazy prick, which I have obviously been very lazy in the last 6 to 12 months when it comes to training, I was like, all right, visualization, boom, that's what I want. Okay, cool, let's go. And then that forces me to go to the gym. I don't really enjoy training at all, but I'm thinking about that visualization. I'm thinking about what my physique's going to look like and, you know, what clothes I'm going to wear, how I'm going to feel, the level of leanness, the muscularity. I have that image in my head and that's what helps drive me and to go to the gym. And then when I'm there and I'm training and I'm thinking about, you know, let's say growing my chest or whatever it is, I can see myself as I'm training, thinking about it, and I start to build momentum and I'm like, yeah. And then when you get a pump on, you sort of, you know, you're like, I can see where this is going. This is going exactly where I want it to go. And then I feel great at the end of my session. And then I got to repeat the same thing for tomorrow.
Yeah, no, I love it, man. And visualization is so important. And it's funny, I did see a clip today and it talked about how you have to almost put these delusions in your head, like of what you want to achieve. And then you have to believe it. To the extent that, like, you know, you're going to make this happen because no one's going to believe you until you make it happen, right? Like, until you're successful, no one's going to give you credit until you're successful. And the only person that's probably holding you back is yourself. And no one else is. Like, because no one cares what you do until you've already got your pro card. They're like, oh shit, like, who's this person? Then they're going to take notice, right?
Yeah. Exactly. And, sometimes, you know what? Sometimes when you achieve a good result, people still will shit on you. So sometimes you win a pro card and people are like, you know what? I had the other person winning, you know, It happens. So you win a pro show or, you know, you're top 5 and you're like, you know what? I believe I should have been top 3. And I think the girl who won wasn't that good. And it happens. You know, you have other coaches that shit on other coaches and whatever else. That's why it's important that, you know, you're doing it for you. So whatever if you're an athlete or a coach, you know, you've got specific goals that are important to you and you're achieving those goals and you're not too concerned about the noise. And that's something that I've also, you know, understood along the way.
We will delve a little bit into that soon. I first want to ask you though, how did you become Australia's number one bikini coach?
Setting the goal and it's, you know what it is? It was just setting the goal and believing in it. And it was like, I'm a big fan of, there's a book, I've said this a couple of times. So Napoleon Hill, there's a book by Napoleon Hill. It's called Think and Grow Rich. And one of the quotes in there is all achievement is stemmed from a burning desire. And I took that and I believed in that wholeheartedly. I'm like, that's me. I resonated with that. And I embedded that mindset and I was like, this is exactly what I'm going to do. I want it wholeheartedly. And I don't, like I said before, like, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, like what the process is like, but I'm going to get there. And then I was like, what would someone in that position who would be the Australia's best, what would they do? And then I'm going to like sort of practice being successful when you're without, meaning that you may not be there, but you need to practice like you're there. You need to be that person. So studying the sport, you know, asking questions from different coaches, could be the right thing, could be the wrong thing, talking to athletes, collecting information. And like, if you, for example, wanted to create a niche and wanted to be like really successful in bikini or in men's physique or whatever category, the first thing you need to do, if you want to get into the coaching game, you want to take it seriously, go on NPC News Online and start looking at the photos, looking at the competitors, get familiar with pros. And that's what I did. I started studying the sport and I was going on YouTube, looking at different training videos. I couldn't find a lot of different things. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm going to start stalking like who the top coaches are. Hany Rambod, what's he doing? Do I agree with it? You know, his training principles like FSD7 and whatever else. So just, it was all about collecting information. And all I knew that in order for me to achieve that goal, I just had to take action. And I was just like, sometimes it was the wrong action, but it had to be something. So I had to always find something, always had to have a conversation. And then I had to find the competitive edge. And then I started looking at what other coaches were doing that I thought were successful or that are considered great coaches in Australia. And I was like, they're missing out on this. They're not doing this. So I can do that. Why aren't they doing that? And I'll sort of try to look at it from a perspective of, I try to be a real true critical thinker and think about, you know, where I could fit myself in the coaching space. And I looked at conditioning, I looked at posing, like, why aren't these coaches like, they're just not posing at a high level. Like the athletes pose like shit. And then the whole thing about posing coaches came, like exploded. Now everyone's a posing coach, right? But back then there was a lot of poor posers. There was a lot of ladies that just didn't pose to the high level. But now it's a little bit more common for have a bit better posing coaches and better posers on the day. But yeah, I just saw a lot of things that were lacking attention to detail. And there wasn't a lot of knowledge. And as the sport evolves, of course, the knowledge becomes a lot easier to access. And, you know, you can go on YouTube and study the Olympia and look at competitors. You don't know shit about posing. Go and watch the Olympia. Just stare at Laura Lee. Watch that same video 30 times. You're gonna learn about transitions very quickly. But I feel like people don't want to step outside their comfort zone or even think outside the box and study what is very obvious to me. Success leaves clues. Why not study the best? Learn from it doesn't mean that you're going to pick up everything, but there's going to be something you can learn from watching these videos and studying the sport. So for me, it was just about taking action.
And just getting it done. That attention to detail, executing the plan, belief in yourself. These are probably all the markers that made you who you are today and obviously the best coach and bikini coach in Australia. And so obviously like posing is one of those things, right? Like I think... we'll get into that soon. I do want to do another podcast with you full about bikini only when you do come over to Perth, which is going to be exciting. But I want to ask you first with business. So you obviously have a ton of clients. You have clients who are motivated and you're going to get clients who probably think they are motivated, probably not until they start with you. How do you deal with clients leaving you?
I think first of all, it's important to not be emotional about it and understand that everyone has a different mindset, different goals. They may not connect with you. If you can get feedback, like if I can get feedback from them, that's great. But sometimes, most of the time, I know exactly why they leave. Sometimes it's motivation. They might not feel supported or it's just not the right time for them. There's so many different reasons why a client could leave or they might be looking for another opportunity to learn from someone else. It's fine. So for me, I don't take anything personal. It's just at the end of the day, you know, as coaches, I think some coaches get really shitty when clients leave. It's kind of, and they start shit talking them. I think that's so unprofessional. I think everyone has the right to choose who they want to work with. And it's important for them to start their journey. And it's completely cool with me if someone wants to leave. Like, I think it's not a bad thing. And sometimes clients come back, they try a different coach and they come back and that's fine.
You're definitely a gun of a person. I think a lot of the coaches out there will probably feel a bit disheartened by it. So that's why I had to bring up the question. So if I had to ask you though, like on a scale of 1 to 10, like if someone leaves you, like a client leaves you, a good client, how would you rate that out of 10? Like personally, like would it affect you? Like a 0, like we're talking like, you know, it won't affect you at all?
It depends on context. Depends on who it is. The reason why I think that it's for me, it's about, okay, like what is the reason? Like there's obviously like, it was there value that was provided, you know, where could I have improved? So for me, it's about taking responsibility and thinking about, you know, or collecting information. Like, you know, was there any reason in particular that you'd like to move on? If it's a very like high profile client, I'd want to ask questions and figure it out and go, cool, like I can see where I could improve. And then I use that information to improve on the next few clients, you know? So for me, it's about self-improvement and reflecting on what I can do better next time. And I've done that before. Like sometimes I drop the ball and I'm like, damn, yeah, I did drop the ball there. Okay, cool. I need to make sure that doesn't happen again. And you need those reminders to really provide extra value. So even recently, I thought I haven't been providing as much value as I could. This is the conversation I had with myself, like I think in December, and I was like, I'm going to start doing like every check-in, I'm going to do audio recordings now, you know, and it takes a lot more time, but it's a lot more personal, the approach versus just typing, because the written word can be read differently and perceived differently. Whereas if you send an audio recording, the tonality is very clear. You can tell if, you know, one's excited or not. Otherwise, it can be, you know, you can read something specifically, wow, Troy's very sharp and stern, which is my personality. But when you send audio, you know, passion can be heard from audio. Enthusiasm can be heard from audio. Support, empathy, all these different emotions. So I was like, all right, I'm going to take control of that and send an audio recording, which completely gets rid of any, you know, any miscommunication. There's none of that. So it's about just changing the approach.
Yeah, that does help. And I think a lot of the new and upcoming coaches are also like doing like video recordings and doing a whole bunch, you know.
But you know what? Actually seeing just quickly as well, I seen someone there that I'm not going to name names. And I think it's a good thing that people want to provide value to their clients. But I think a video check-in, it's like how many times can you do a video check-in every week? What are you going to go into detail about the video check-in? It makes it very challenging to do a video check-in. Like, I don't know what value you can give in a video check-in. Like, what are you going to talk about?
Right? Look at them eye to eye to the camera or something. I have no idea.
Yeah, not hating, because I think it's great that coaches want to provide value to their clients and it might be a point of difference. And I think that's good. But I did think about that. I'm like, would I do video check-ins? And I'm like, I just don't see the difference in service that I can provide doing a video check-in, you know? I thought about that.
I do audio check-ins only as well. I just find that it's a lot easier to get my voice across and tell them exactly, like you said, the tonality and everything like that. You can hear the empathy and then people can actually really hear that. So I think like, yeah, doing video is like going over the top of like, you know, trying to really get people to stay on track. So I guess like, you know, how do you manage, I do want to ask that, like, how do you manage like negative feedback? Like, you know, I think I recall there was something to do with lawsuit or something like that. I can't remember. Was it a lawsuit? No, it wasn't a lawsuit. It was someone
defamation.
Called,
defamation. Yeah, defamation. Yeah, yeah.
Yes. Something along those lines. I remember it was a while back. It's like I don't know how long ago it was back. But
yeah.
I do want to discuss that. Like, how did that even happen? Like, yeah.
That's a good question. So that was a dude. So I've never met this dude in my life, right? Yeah. He used to follow me. So he was a fan, and then he decided to get grumpy because I did a powerlifting troll post. Right. So I trolled some powerlifters and it's a fucking meme, guys. And this is the thing, like things are taken so seriously, you can't do a joke. And I'm like, oh, it's a meme. Like, oh, it's not just a meme. It's like, you can't take yourself seriously. It's the internet, you know, like let's all step on eggshells and kind of have a joke. Like I will say, for example, like clearly powerlifters are so much more stronger than bodybuilders. It's not even close, right? Bodybuilders, you know, selfies, flexing in the mirror. You know, we can make jokes about bodybuilders, but as soon as you joke about powerlifters, crossing the line, you can't do that, you know? And it was one of those situations. So it was a fanboy. Then he decided to be all, I'm going to like crush you and da, 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 da. And then he came up with all this shit and said some interesting things.
I did see that video. I had to watch. I was like, what is this guy talking about?
Yeah. It was interesting because that video was sent to me. I didn't watch it once. Oh, you know, I had... Yeah, I was like, I'm not giving it my time or attention. So the way to defeat negativity is to not give it energy. So for me, I was like, I'm not gonna watch it. I'm not gonna if I allow someone to get in my head and if I have an emotional reaction, I'm letting them win. So I didn't watch the video even to this day. I had someone give me cliff notes and I looked at the cliff notes. I'm like, yep, not true. Da, 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 da. Okay, cool. Got my lawyers involved, contacted them. Let's do defamation. Had obviously a private meeting with them. They're like, yeah, this guy's fucked, let's roll. Okay, cool, done. Took it off, shut the fuck up, and then here we are. So for me, if anyone says anything that is, and this is another thing as well, there's always a reason, there's an intention behind people that are posting things, like, and you know what did he specifically want, or what does anyone want when they post negative shit? They want clout. So I feel like that what people post publicly, whether it's constructive, whether it's negative, whatever, it's a true reflection of their self-esteem, whether they're jealous, whether they're insecure, or whether they want some female attention or whatever it is. So we're living in an attention economy, and this guy clearly wanted attention, and he's a failed coach. He clearly doesn't know what he's doing. So for me, it was just like, all right, cool. Like, I'm not going to take offense to this dude. Is this another clout chaser? I would be pissed off too with the success that I've had, you know, and I understand that. Like, I used to actually, just, this is an interesting perspective. I used to, when I got into the game and I was like, I want to be Australia's best coach, I truthfully disliked other coaches because they were more successful than me, right? I looked at them like, why the fuck am I such a hateful, jealous fuckhead, right? Yeah, like, and yeah. I knew, I was very well, I'm like, I'm so hateful of people that are in a higher position than me. But it stemmed from insecurity. It's because I didn't achieve what they've achieved. And I thought of like, you know, I can do better than them. I had the mindset of I'm better than them, or I can do better, but I had the wrong attitude. So I see what other people do and I understand where it comes from. But for me, like, obviously, if someone's going to attack me in a way that's defamatory, I'm not going to waste time. Like, I'm going to get my lawyer onto you, and that's it. Let it handle it. But I'm not going to give it energy apart from that. So lawyers handle it. I can still take it to court if I want to, but the guy hasn't said anything. He deleted the post. I'm like, do I really want to give it more energy? Because where you give your energy to, where your focus is, that's what's going to happen. I'm a truly believer in the law of attraction, like what you say, think, and feel, you know, and what you give your energy to, you become. So do I want to pursue that road if I needed to? For example, if he started popping off again, 100%, you're gone, bro. Like, yeah. I just think it's very odd when people do want to share negative things and they've had no personal interaction with me. You know, you're a fanboy, and then you decided to jump ship for whatever reason. So it's very odd how someone can be, I like your post, and all of a sudden now you're an asshole. Cool, though. I don't even know you do, dude. So, but yeah, negativity, if it's from like, I don't know, if it's like hateful stuff like that, I don't give it energy. I'm aware of it. I go, yep, cool, that's happening. What do I want to do about it? If it's to an extreme level like that, any coaches that are listening, it's actually quite interesting. There's one particular person who's gonna get served. It's gonna be another one soon. It's gonna be interesting. I'm sure he's gonna share it on social media without naming names, because I'm not gonna not allowed. There's a he. I think everyone can figure that out. So I'm gonna let him get served, and he can enjoy that. And if he wants to keep popping off, we'll take him to court. It'll be funny. So I think it's important to stand up for yourself, guys. Like, you know, bullying is not acceptable. Defamation is not acceptable. If someone is saying things publicly about you, it really stems from insecurity. You know, there's always an intention and reason behind things, whether it's jealousy, whether it's they've got their own life sucks, or they've got some deep mental health issues, which is not a joke, by the way. If people have depression, they've got PTSD, they've got a lot of different things going on, but that doesn't give them an opportunity to, or an excuse to, slander you publicly or to put you down. It's kind of like an abusive relationship. Same thing, you know, like, it's not acceptable just because you've had a certain past or you've got some pre-existing conditions, whatever. It doesn't give anyone the right to be a jackass. So I would say that's my take on that.
And I guess, like, I do want to ask you though, so how did you overcome this insecurities? As you said, when you first started out, you were like, I want to be the best coach. You're looking at other coaches and kind of like secretly like, oh, I'm hating on these guys, I could do better, kind of thing. Like, and I think a lot of coaches out there are probably going through that right now. You know, they're looking at other people like, oh, why are these people so famous? Like, why are they so good? How did you overcome that? I guess, like, that insecurity, what methods did you use to be like, okay, you know what? I just need to focus on my own game. I need to focus on my own craft. Because I feel like that's something I personally do. I just focus on what I'm doing. Like, how do I serve my clients better? And that's all that matters. If I can give my clients the best results, I feel great. You know, it doesn't matter about what other people are doing. But how did you overcome that?
It is difficult, because I think one thing that's going to happen is if you have good results, you're probably going to stop being so insecure, because you're like, oh, you know what, I've actually proved to, because you're thinking that insecurity comes from proving to other people, right? Not just to yourself. So you haven't proved yourself yet. So if you focus on delivering good results, you're going to build momentum. You're going to prove yourself to others, like the perception of, this person's a good coach, this person gets good results. But I think things need to happen on a deeper level. So for me, like, real talk, I see a clinical psychologist, right? I've been seeing a clinical psychologist for the last, what is it now? It's almost 2.5 years. Best decision I ever made. You know, I'd say Yeah, you know what? We're going to go back to the Dubai. Moving to Dubai was the second best decision ever made. The best decision ever made was to invest in the clinical psychologist. Yeah. So that changed the game for me because I've been able to go through a process of evaluating, about managing emotion, about, you know, knowing who I am and going through the process of being my best self. So if you're focused on being your best, being everything that you can be, the focus shifts from what other people are doing to what you can do better. And if you're, you know, reviewing, like I mentioned before, reviewing your daily performance, reviewing even weekly, even monthly, whatever it is, you don't have to do it daily, you don't have to be crazy. You can do it as probably weekly or monthly is fine. But if your focus shifts on what you can do to be a better athlete, to be a better person, to be a better coach, you know, to be a better friend, whatever it is, that is the most important thing. And when, again, energy is on other people, that's when you become hatred, that's when you become jealous, and you're so focused on what they're doing versus what you can do to be better.
That's everybody needs to go back and listen to what Troy says. I think that just makes a bunch of sense. You know, that just puts all the pieces together of that self-development, and also like teaching to focus on yourself, like focus, put your energy into yourself. There's so much energy, like, you don't want to give negative energy, you know? And I think that's so important to take away. And I think in today's society, it's one of those things that, you know, people like to call out other people now. You know, it's one of those things. It's like almost like a marketing strategy. We know someone like, obviously, Greg Doucette does a great job at just kind of talking about other people's pages and stuff like that. That's what he does. And he kind of grew his brand on that. How do you think do you think that's a good way of branding for people?
See, I've done that before too. That's how I started off. And that's the truth, right? And then it's like, what was the intention behind that? You know, obviously I thought certain things, but guess what, guys? It stemmed from insecurity, right? I was insecure as fuck because why? Like I mentioned before, I didn't achieve diddly shit. I was so focused on criticizing others. And I wasn't reflecting on what I could do differently and what I could improve on. So it stems from insecurity. And yeah, sorry, Greg, I'd say you're an insecure fuck. And
no, you didn't.
Shit. It is. It's very obvious, you know, like when people do that, it's like, but I also think he's very entertaining. I think he pops off. He's very entertaining. I've watched his videos.
Yeah, I do enjoy it.
he's amusing. So we're living in an attention economy. You know, if you can garner attention and you can monetize it, then all power to you. But I think it's just important to figure out, you know, what is your why? What do you enjoy doing? And if his why is calling out people because he wants to be perceived as an authority on a particular topic, that's cool. That's his why. I'm not too sure. If that's fulfilling for him, then that's all that matters. So as long as he's doing what is in his best interest, that's fine. But I think, you know, I think that's probably the best thing, the way to put it. If that's his why, that's fulfilling for him, then go for it.
And that's what he enjoys doing. I guess, like, you know, we do need people who need to keep an open mind, because I think, you know, there are like wild claims nowadays with anything to do with fitness, health, nutrition. Like, you know, this is the way to diet, this is the way to train. And I think it's just like people are just believing what people are saying, like famous people are saying, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, people are easily influenced. I mean, the COVID pandemic didn't teach us anything. Everyone take your vaccinations. You know, the leader is good. The leader is great.
Did you take your vaccinations? You do it.
So for the purpose of this podcast, yes.
I appreciate your consideration.
Absolutely. Of course. I'm highly vaccinated.
Highly vaccinated. Actually, no, I did hear stuff about that, but we'll go on that. That's another day. So I guess I do want to ask, if you could go back in time and talk to your old self, what would you say to them? Like your 6-7 year ago, Troy, like when you're P10, like when you're working through everything.
One piece of advice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Work on your self-esteem. Work on your self-esteem. That's the key. That's the key to everything. It's the key to happiness. It's the key to fulfillment. It's the key to taking action. The confidence that you have, that if you can build your self-esteem and work on that, you'll be a completely different person. I truly believe that you can't be your best self unless you work on your self-esteem. If you have low self-esteem, that's fine. I was one of those people that had very low self-esteem. And I think a lot of people can resonate with that. That's fine. But what is important is identifying that you have an issue and doing what you can about it. So for me, it was like, I didn't know what the solution was. I took a risk, stepped outside my comfort zone. I was like, I need to see a clinical psychologist. I didn't even know what true self-esteem meant until I've gone through the process. But now, having gone through that process and I still see my psych, I can identify that and see it in other people. And I come from a different perspective now, even with my coaching. And I realize that everyone has different needs and they need a different level of support depending on how confident they are and what they feel about themselves. And some people, like especially men, will have this sort of, it's almost like this toxic masculinity, but where this thought where they can't be vulnerable and they can't be open, which is the wrong approach. If you are vulnerable, you're going to grow. So I think for my younger self, I would say work on your self-esteem and everything else is going to sort itself out because you're going to be your best for you.
Amazing. This is probably one of the best advices I've heard. Deep and meaningful, honestly. So thank you for going all in and telling me exactly like, you know, what you've been doing for the past few years. I think it's so important for people to recognize that problem and get some help, you know, improve, find the right methods. And there's many good books out there, right? So what's your number one book you have that you would recommend for the listeners to listen to or read?
It depends on the purpose. Because I used to look, I'm a bit of a book slut. So, you know, I do love a good book. Not being a weirdo, but hey, guys, for the book readers out there, they understand what I mean. If you go to like a bookstore, right? This is kind of creepy, but that's fine. I'm happy to share it. So you go to a bookstore, you open up a book and you smell how good the new book is. That shit is legit. Nothing else is as nice as smelling a new book. I'm telling you, it's just.
This is good.
For the food lovers out there, it's probably as nice as smelling a nice fresh lasagna.
Yeah, right? For you, it's a book. Okay.
It's a book. I love it. So, I would say to answer your question, it depends if you're a new reader, you're intermediate. I mean, for new readers. For people in the fitness industry, let's say it like that, right? You're an athlete, you're just in general lifestyle, you're into going to the gym, you want to develop your mindset, go pick up Tim Grover's book, Relentless. I know that's been posted a lot on social media.
Yeah.
That's probably the best book to read because it's very easy to read. He's very relatable, uses a lot of swear words, but it's just all about mindset and building momentum and having an unquestionable belief in yourself and to develop that mindset. I think there's something to learn from that book. There's something that you can learn from every book, but for someone that's not into reading, you could buy that book and you could get through it. Whereas if I recommended, let's say, you know, I mentioned before, Think and Grow Rich, definitely avoid that book. It's a complex read. If you're not a true reader, it's a little bit different. But what I would recommend for people that would like to learn about different books that might be a little bit more harder reads, a little bit more complex, like Think and Grow Rich, you can download an app called Blinkist, and it will summarize the key points of certain books into like 10 to 15 minute summaries, bullet points, and sometimes it expands beyond bullet points, and you can get the key points of those books that are considered hard reads. So if you got low on time, you got a low attention span, or you're just not wanting to commit to a very in-depth read, that's probably the next best thing. Download the app and you can use my discount code.
What's the discount code under?
Right? I wish. But I would do that. So, but definitely read the whole book, Relentless. But go and buy that. I would say that's probably a good place to start.
Love it, man. Appreciate that so much. So now we're going to go into talking about listener questions. So some of the questions that listeners have asked, there was quite a few, so I apologize to the people who are listening who actually asked like 3 or 4 questions. I decided to choose one of your 3 or 4 questions because Troy, we'll probably be here for a while if we answer them. So we'll start off with the first question. How do you have time for yourself when you have so many amazing athletes?
You got to schedule it. And that's something that I neglected heavily. When I was building this coaching business and the team, there was a long time all I did was work like a maniac. I couldn't tell you the amount of hours that I worked during a week. It was really mental. And it wasn't just about coaching. It was about research. It was about learning and studying. And I put a lot of time into that. So that became really challenging. Now I'm a lot more social. So it's just about scheduling time in and going, okay, this is the time where I'm working. This is the time where I'm going to be social, whether I'm going to, you know, go out, see friends, go on a date or whatever it might be. You know, it's just allocating that time. And then coming up, what I do is I've got a goal sort of spreadsheet where it's like short term, medium term, long term. And I've got different goals depending on what I'm interested in, like social, different events, you know, relationship goals, like friendships, etc. So I've got goals specific to those topics, and I've got it populated. So I'm like, cool. I actually haven't gone to check out, you know, there's a museum here, for example. It's called Museum of the Future. Apparently it's epic. So that's in my checklist. I've got to go. Cool. I've got to go check that out. Yeah. Apparently it's just wild. So, you know, like things like, let's say dune buggies, I've ticked that off the list, and I ticked that off the list because I had it written down. So for me, I'm all about writing down goals or objectives or things that you want to do and achieve. And what gets measured gets results, right? I wasn't being social. I wasn't doing all these cool activities because I didn't write it down. And for me, I need to write it down to take action, because then I've got a reminder. So for me, it's all about goal setting and visualization. So I'm like, okay, dune buggies. Then I think about it going in the desert. I'm like, yeah, no, that is really cool. And then I'm like, I need to do that. So that really gets me off my ass out of like working on the computer, sort of, to go out and be social. So I think for anyone that's listening that doesn't have that balance, I mean, if it's important to you and you want to experience things, and if you're more introverted, I mean, it's more challenging for introverts, and I get it. Write down some cool goals and think about, you know, these are the activities that I want to achieve. Like maybe you want to go skydiving in 12 months. You don't want to go right now because you might be scared to do it, but write it down. And then as time ticks and you've only got a couple months of the year left, and you're like, oh, I ripped down, I have to do it now, because you've given yourself a timeline. It's like you have a timeline specific to, let's say, a weight loss goal. I've got to lose 20 kilos for my wedding. Time's ticking. You want to lose those 20 kilos for your wedding. It's the same thing if you want to go skydiving or if you want to do a different activity. So for me, I like to write things down.
Love it. And although I do want to ask, because, you know, as the team grows, even at S Legion, I do find it hard to manage clients at shows. How do you manage all your clients at like the pro league shows? Because I know you have like 20 girls in like one show. Is that about right? Or like even more than that?
Yeah, so it is. I've had that, and it is challenging, and it's like it's hard to explain, because like when I first I think what was the first contest that I did that was really challenging? I think there was one season where I was like, wow, I need to like learn, like I need to be more efficient, and I think I had 13 clients one season, and I was just like, that was fucking heaps. Like, how did I do that? You know. But then I reviewed and I go, okay, what could I do differently? Da, 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 da. And I worked through the process. I'm like, okay, that's where I went wrong, or I could have done that better. So, last season, yeah, I had a bit over 20. And for me, I've become really efficient at problem solving. So this is something different as well. And every coach has their own way to do things. So I'm not a fan of, let's say, giving someone a peak week document and saying, these are your meals for the week. That's just not my style. I like to, you know, have somewhat of an outline on, okay, we're going to do low carb days, but I like to analyze what the physique is looking like on the day during peak week, and then I can make adjustments. And then on comp day, I don't go, here's your comp day diet. I don't, no disrespect to other coaches, I guess, like everyone has their own methods and that's fine, but I can't just go, this is your, you know, four meals before stage, by, and not monitor how someone looks. I need to adjust it based on how they're looking and what I see. So for me on comp day, you know, I'll have a rough idea of where someone's at based on their check-ins the day before. So if they're doing a, you know, morning check-in and night check-in, which what I do. So peak week, I like to do two check-ins a day. So morning and night, at the minimum. Sometimes if someone's got a faster metabolism, I'll request it more frequently, depending on who it is. And I have done that. So that's the bare minimum. So let's say, for example, I've got a competitor that I know I've been filling out for 3 days and they're on the flatter side. I know that the first two meals the next day, logically, I could give them a lot more food knowing that they're not going to spill over, right? But I'm going to have to look at that client after meal two, like probably an hour after meal two. So I have everything in my head planned on what I need to do, and everything is calculated based on the information that I've received during peak week. So I can figure out, and I sort of know if someone's on a fuller side or flatter because of the information that I've collected throughout the week, and especially the night before. And then I get information in the morning. So it's just about knowing where they're at and understanding the athlete and learning their body. And for me now, I've got that experience where I can make a decision very quickly, because without even looking at an athlete after meal two on show day, for example, I know roughly where they're at based on the information throughout the week and through the from the morning check-in, and how much they've flattened out from, let's say, if the show's on Saturday, from Friday night till Saturday morning. So I've got that opportunity to go, yep, I know roughly where they're at. And then I'll look at them after meal two, for example. Doesn't have to be on meal two. Could look after meal one. I could go, yep, I thought you were going to look like this. You're actually a little bit fuller from based on the meals I've given you. And now I've got to adjust. But I quickly make adjustments and judgment calls. I'm very efficient at it. So it's just about managing how they're looking based on carbohydrate intake and coming up with calculated judgments based on the information you get during peak week. So, and then I make a call quickly on comp day. So for me, it's pretty easy because I can see things. When it's hard, if I've got someone with a super fast metabolism, which then I will look at them very frequently. Like I had, I was actually talking about this the other day to someone, but there was an athlete. So for season B last year, Tabby actually. So I actually took over her prep and, you know, she did really well. She won nationals of juniors and won an open novice class and second in open, which was good. And did the amateur Olympia in Japan, right? She won the open class there. She had a really crazy metabolism, which made no sense. So everything that I just explained to you about logically, you can, you know, X, Y, Z, I just told you the whole story. So I filled her up to a high level and I was like, yep, you're good. Show day, we're going to be sweet. Show day woke up flat as a pancake. I'm like, what the fuck? By the way, there's no diuretic. There's no cutting water. There's none of that. So those variables aren't needed to be like this. Exactly. So it's like, okay, cool. I was like, I'm going to be really heavy with the first meal. So, you know, 100 grams of carbs plus, you know, for the first meal. I gave her the first two meals and they're both like 100 grams plus. I was like, cool. And generally, you know, if you have 200 grams plus of carbohydrates for a female, first thing comp day morning, you're probably going to fill out. Most competitors might even spill over on that amount. They wouldn't be able to tolerate that. But for her, I was like, I know what she needed. Saw her after meal two and I looked at her and I thought, I didn't say anything, but my face, I'd poker face, but my mind was fucking blown. She was so fucking flat. She looked flat, like flatter than she did during peak week when at her like lowest. I'm like, how the fuck is that mathematically possible, right? So I had to problem solve on the spot. And what happens is that my attention happens to go to her because I'm like, I've got to figure things out. So I started feeding her every hour and watching her like a hawk and assessing her fullness. So everyone does have, like there are some exceptions to the rule, like for example, like her. And it's just about knowing who those athletes are. And if you're looking at photos and you're getting data regularly, you can make a judgment call on show day, even if there's 20 clients, because you've collected all the information throughout the week and you know who the trouble clients are. So I had Jackie, my manager, helping me backstage. And I actually said to her, this is only, I can say this publicly because no one knows, but I gave her a list. I said, these five girls are a problem today in terms of they need more attention because they're flattening out or they've got a very fast metabolism. Yeah, yeah. So she was aware of that. And I communicated that with her. And she, while I was checking on the other girls, she'd give me updates on those specific five girls that needed that, you know, because sometimes you would tell a girl to eat and they're like, oh, just having a chat, taking photos. Next thing you know, it's been half an hour and they haven't eaten. No, you need to eat. Because
now, you're shooting
these calories. So, you know, it's just coming up with a game plan with the different athletes and their individual requirements. And you know, to be fair, I didn't eat on comp day. I'm just literally going from check-in to check-in to check-in. You know, so
the nerves are real as well. You're probably like, oh fuck, like it is a lot to handle. And I think, you know, that experience you have prior to, you know, them jumping on stage is the experience you need. Like, obviously, they have to be with you for like a certain amount of time. So you've seen how their body responds to, do you do like trial peak weeks and stuff like that to kind of see how people respond? Or you just give them like high carb days, low carb days, and you just manage to see how their body responds?
Yeah, see, I like, and again, no disrespect to other coaches, but I don't believe in trial peak weeks. I think that every peak week's different because you can carb someone up and give them a trial peak week and that specific peak week will work that week. What happens is sometimes the metabolism speeds up. Sometimes they're in a really depleted state for that peak week. Then if that trial peak week is 2 weeks before the contest, logically, they don't have all that time to deplete to go into extremely flat state as they were when you did that trial peak week. So they may not need the same amount of calories to fill out because they haven't had that time to deplete. So there's so many different variables that need to come into play where I think it's interesting to collect information. I'm not against that, but for me, it's not something that I've ever used as a strategy because I've had ladies that do back-to-back shows and the carb-up protocol is completely different. And most of the time, that's not true. I can't even say a general statement. I was going to say most of the time their metabolism speeds up, but that's not also true. Sometimes you give them less food because they maintain fullness. You know, they don't need as a heavier carb up if they've maintained fullness from that show and if they've got a second show the next week. So everyone needs to be treated as an individual.
Yes, 100%. And I think, you know, you're pretty experienced just from like the amount of clients you have dealt with over the years. pretty gives you that natural gut instinct to kind of know what someone kind of needs. And that's how you, would you say that's how you kind of problem solve a little bit better? Obviously the knowledge from past comps and stuff like that of other people.
Yeah. I love difficult clients because they're the ones that you learn most from, and difficult, not in a sense of fuck you, Troy, but the ones that have
that. Do you get a lot of that?
It's interesting. I do get, I don't get the fuck you Troys, but I do get the, I'm smarter than you, Troy, without them saying it, but there's a bit of ego in this industry, and everyone thinks that not everyone, but there's some people that think they're smarter than the coach, but really they don't have the experience or knowledge. And it's good that they're confident, but sometimes it's misguided confidence, you know? So there's a reason why you're not a coach yet. Yeah. That doesn't mean that you can't be, but if you knew as much as I would, you wouldn't be in your position right now, and you would have, you know, you would have Olympians yourself. You'd have people that won pro cards. This is another thing. If you don't have successful athletes in your team, and you don't, you know, you're not a pro yourself, or you don't work with pro athletes, probably criticizing other people isn't worth your time. Just criticize yourself and your own performance before you worry about what other people do or don't do. It's kind of like people that criticize or talk about bikini when they don't know diddly shit about bikini. It's like, you know, you're not an authority on the topic. It's like me, for example, right now, starting to critique soccer players. I don't know shit about soccer. Why the fuck am I going to talk about soccer for? Yep, you know, I'm, that's not my area of specialty. Like, I'm not going to discuss that because I don't know shit about it. So it's like, leave. If you, that's not your niche, if that's not what you focus on, just let it go. Like, drop the ego and let it go, bro.
So has there been people in the past that have called you out for being Australia's number one bikini coach?
Oh, they love the fact that I refer to myself as that. And of course, the guys, listen, it's not just about the law of attraction, you know, believing in it wholeheartedly and setting it as a goal. It's also about marketing. You've got to market yourself in a way, and you're positioning yourself, you know, from a business point of view. And that's an obvious thing. Let's say, for example, I have, there's ladies that are new and fresh into the sport all the time. They don't know that I have a bikini Olympian, right? They don't know that Tani Sheehan just won the WBFF pro show, right? So just to put it out there, guys, just for the people that don't like me, I have the best IFBB athlete and the best WBFF pro athlete, so you can suck on that. And so enjoy that.
Yeah. So you beat that one.
Absolutely. The results do the talking, and if you think you can do better, prove it. You haven't proved it, so you can talk all you like. But I think it's important to market yourself in a way where you believe that there is value, believe that there is truth. And for me, positioning myself like that and saying that label, you're going to have new competitors going, oh, ooh, that's a very bold claim. But that's a part of like marketing, right? So what I really recommend for people that want to establish themselves as an authority, come up with a massive claim. So what is your massive claim? What can you claim that you do better than anyone else? And then create a phrase, create a slogan out of that and use it as a selling point. So whether you're a specialist in glute training, you're a specialist in biomechanics, you're a specialist in rehab, you know, whatever it is, you've got to figure out what you can claim that you can do better than anyone else, and then use it as a selling point or a marketing tool. So that's the reason why I do that as well. So it's a bit of both. Now, what was the question? This is what happened. Do you know what it is? This podcast is unofficially sponsored by C4 and the 200 milligrams of caffeine.
I just enjoyed listening. I'm just sitting here just like having a yarn, you know? I think like, it's one of those things like you've got to make those big claims, and I think it's important, but you must first develop your skill set. You've got to have the skill set to make those claims. So I wouldn't recommend making those claims unless you have that skill set. You know, like Troy was like, I'm going to believe it. And then boom, he's like, once he started creating all these pros, you know, you were like, I'm Australia's number one best bikini coach, you know? Was it straight away that you changed it, or was it something that you... Because I feel like when I was following you a while ago, you didn't have it there only until like later on.
Yeah,
right?
I had to prove it. I had to like... I'm like,
to prove it first, right? Yeah.
How can I make it at least a debate where even the people... This is my logic, right? The people that dislike me, coaches that are like, nah, 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 nah. Like, how can I make it debatable from at least from a hater perspective that this is likely? Like, for me, it wasn't a debate, but how can I make it debatable for someone that just doesn't like me, right? So I was like, cool. Once I achieved that, I was like, duh. So it's like, you know, Australian pro show, let's say first, second, and fourth, right? Nicole really was third. Like, that was like worst case third. Just saying.
Don't want to say
this is okay, but I will. This is just my personal opinion, right? Nicole right? Was looking very, very good next to Alex. I was just saying. I think Nicole arguably had the best rear shot out of everyone that competed at Australian Pro Show. Just saying, and I'm not biased because I got obviously Alex and Nay were competing. Duh, but that's just what I see. So if you arguably, debatably have, let's say worst case, top two rear shot, how do you place fourth? I don't know that. I just don't know. Just putting it out there, right?
We got video footage of how it's kind of going, and all of a sudden it just changed and it just did a 180. So don't it? It's a weird one. I got not much to really say about that one, but it just only means she just got to improve still. It doesn't change the fact that she wants to still improve and, you know, come in better next time. So that's all she can do. Yeah. So,
yeah, absolutely.
So we went on a tangent talking about bikini. Love it. So going back to the questions, you still have three more to go to. Okay. Role of nutrition when building a quality physique, whole foods or mix?
Depending on the metabolism and the digestion. Okay. So digestion needs to be number one concern. So if you're digesting a mix, that's fine. If digestion becomes an issue, then go back to whole foods or clean up the diet. So some ladies can do macros and have a variety of food sources and digestion's on point. Absolutely. Take advantage of that. You know, you can be, let's call it the exception to the bro rule, right? Whereas some ladies need to have a very precise diet with limited food sources because their digestion or their energy might be a concern. And like for me personally, apart from my C4s that I drink, I've got to keep my diet very basic. Otherwise my digestion can come in. Like let's say if I started having a little bit of cheeky food sources, right? That would tip over my C4 abuse. And then I would have like probably loose stools, et cetera. And I'd rather drink C4 than have a variety of food sources. So it's about picking and choosing your battles. I do think C4 is a lot better than Monster drinks from a digestion point of view, by the way, guys. Like I think Monster's not the best option, in my opinion, for digestion quality. But it's about, you know, digestibility. So if you're digesting the food really well, have a variety of food sources, a mixture's fine.
Yeah, love it. And okay, next question. Is it possible to downsize a waist thickened by squats and deadlifts? So please don't talk about powerlifters.
Yeah.
You bring up one of these.
Absolutely. And you know what was really cool? I was watching a Hany Rambod podcast the other day, and it was I forget what the title was, and he actually touched on heavy lifts, and he actually said, you know, powerlifters clearly lift a lot of heavy load, therefore their trunks are gonna grow. It's just part of it. And he said he, with his athletes, he's very mindful of, you know, adding different exercises in for that purpose. I'm like, you know what? Suck on that, everybody. Hany Rambod just said that. He's the GOAT. So I didn't just come up with this theory myself. I learned it from people, industry leaders. And I thought, wow, that's quite obvious. And that's what I looked at when it came. You know how I said to you about the whole coaching thing, about what other coaches were doing? I'm like, how come everyone's squatting and deadlifting as bikini competitors? To me, it was just illogical. And I'm like, okay, that's going to be my point of difference. I'm going to market that and say squats and deadlifts are absolutely retarded, which obviously I was very aggressive with that. And it created discussion. And I was like, oh, that's a very bold claim. Piss people off, et cetera, but it's part of marketing, right? Kind of like a Greg thing. But it does separate. You need a point of difference. And that was, for me, one of the things that I recommended. Now, going to your question, yes, you can. Stop. If you're squatting and deadlifting, stop. You know, on the ECG, AMG. Did I say AMG? We're not talking about. Yeah, ECG. You know what? I was talking about someone that had an ECG done the other just before. That's why it was in my head. So the squat can actually recruit more lower back than a deadlift. I don't know if that's how credible that is, but it's interesting that it's even comparable. So if you're lifting heavy with squats and deadlifts all the time, eventually your lower back, your trunks can have to grow. It's going to have to adapt to the load. So let's say if you really love squatting, for example, I would replace it with a hack squat, you know, something that's not going to compress your trunk as much, and just being mindful of exercises. And it's not just that, it's execution of exercises. So you can do a deadlift, lifting a lot with glute hamstrings, you know, for bodybuilding purposes, or you can do a deadlift from A to B. There's a big difference between doing a powerlifting deadlift and a deadlift with the intention to put as much tension on the muscle as possible, perhaps non-explosive, you know. So you can load up a bar and do an RDL and really grind through the reps and just load up the weight. Or you can do it, you know, with really good precision, very good tempo, and less weight, which potentially means less transfer on the core and the lower back. So it's about exercise execution, just as it is about exercise selection. So I would be very mindful of the exercises that do recruit, you know, a lot of abs, a lot of lower back, and also look at, you know, are you training abs? You know, are you training lower back specifically? Like, you know, you're doing hyperextensions, et cetera. So it's just about exercise selection and then definitely execution, because sometimes the execution's off.
Yeah, 100%. And so is it possible, though, going back to the question, is it possible to actually downsize the waist though? So once it's already thickened, do you think, okay, obviously cutting out squats and deadlifts is the first call you have to probably make, like, hey, you need to stop doing those. But then is there a way of downsizing it?
Yeah, so if we're talking about, like, there's a big difference in the structure of the waist, you know, structure, like bone structure, et cetera, versus density. So if you've built density, like, there was one, I was thinking, so there's an IFBB Bikini Pro, Libby Pickering, her name is. So it was interesting, when she was an amateur, so she turned pro, she was on the team. She actually did this transition before me. It was really interesting because she showed me. I was like, oh, wow. Like, I didn't realize your waist was like that. So she was really focusing on powerlifting lifts. And not everyone has the same results. There's so many different variables that come into play in terms of how much your waist can or can't grow, depending on, you know, if you're eating in a surplus at all times, how well you are growing muscle, et cetera, your level of experience. With her, she showed me the photos of how she was when squatting, deadlifting 2 to 3 times per week. Then to completely not squatting and deadlifting and cutting out all abdominal work, her waist came in so much that the oblique thickness has definitely went down. And I didn't see this until she showed me. She's like, oh, by the way, I found these photos, and she sent it through to me. And this was, I didn't get to see what she looked like before because I started working with her when she had a smaller waist, if that makes sense. So I didn't know that she had that issue. So she actually came to me after she fixed the issue, and I thought, what the hell? Like, is this interesting that so many people that I've worked with may have gone through that experience themselves, and they've come to that, you know, oh, I can do this, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to try this. And she got that result without even having a discussion with me, because when I started working with her, she had a small waist, and I didn't realize it was that little bit blocky. Structurally, she's got a small midsection, but it was so much thicker in the obliques, and it was just interesting to see it downsize. So she did that over a period of 12 months. A good example is even Alexandra Bander. She used to do a lot of heavy squats, deadlifts. Her waist is just getting smaller every season. If you compare her waist at the Olympia, for example, versus when she turned pro, even, big difference, huge difference.
And do you think that, obviously there's a lot of other, you know, other factors. She probably could have came in leaner. Do you think that could have been a factor as well? Or was she lean, like the same leanness each show? Or did she maybe build up her taper? Would you say those are like some of the things you could do if you are like someone that is competing in bikini?
Yeah. So I say, like in Alex's example, she was definitely leaner. And that's the thing. If you've got the same level of body fat, right, then, you know, you can see a difference in musculature. But if you need to lose more body fat, you can create an illusion of a smaller waist as well. Absolutely. Because you're going to a place you've never been before. Your waist is going to be smaller, less body fat, et cetera. But, you know, with her specifically, yeah, she actually just lost a bit of density. She didn't have that thickness in the obliques that I've seen. And it's interesting as well. Like, you think of it from this perspective, you got male or female, you got some males or some females have a genetic predisposition to grow a certain body part a lot easier. So imagine if that was abdominals for you as a bikini competitor, right?
Yeah.
That's going to make it really interesting, because you're going to have to downsize an area that is going to grow very well. And if you're getting stimulation, it's going to grow quicker than others. So context is required for every individual. You have some ladies who can get away with squatting and deadlifting a bit more. Their waist doesn't look as interesting as some other competitors. You're like, oh, why is that? Hold on. She's got actually a really small waist, but she's squatting and deadlifting. Then is it so many variables, like I said, execution, form execution, you know, genetic predisposition, so many different factors. But you will also find that when the execution's not on point, those are the people that grow a thicker lower back and a thicker midsection, because they're using that as leverage to move the weight from A to B. And that's where you'll see, like, CrossFitters, you know, and powerlifters. CrossFitters probably more so. They've got a thicker waist than even powerlifters, because they're really grinding through with shit form.
Yeah, because they're pushing through a ton of weight over time, and they're probably so fatigued, they can't even keep their core tight. So they're just doing whatever they can to get the weight off and hitting those numbers. Lovely. So, hey, last question. When do you guys think season A in Australia overall bikini should resemble Maureen? So I think the question is more, does, you know, season A, the pro winner has to resemble Maureen?
No. definitely doesn't have to, because Moraine's a freak of freaks. So if someone was going to resemble Moraine, well, she's going straight to the Olympia. You know what I mean? So it's Moraine is one of those special athletes that don't come often. I mean, smallest of waists, shoulder waist ratio. She's a very pretty woman as well. Like, she truly embodies bikini, and really nice structure. Like, everything's there, right? Well developed everywhere. So, you know, I think that it's all about the criteria didn't change, guys. So the Gendori winning to Moraine winning, it's like, oh, we've gone for Moraine now. Da 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 da. It's like, it's the best athlete on the day. So based on the criteria, who you're up against, you know, if, for example, Gendori made some corrections, could she have beaten Moraine? Absolutely. Did I have Moraine winning the O? Not personally. I thought Jen in person to me had a bit more pop, but I can see the argument for Moraine winning. I definitely had them top two. That's fine. But I certainly didn't have an issue with Moraine winning. I had Moraine winning the front pose. I had Gendori winning the rear shot, just for context for everyone that's listening. Some people go, oh, but Maureen's out of glutes. I get it from the rear, 100%. Just in real life, I just saw it a little bit different. It's very subjective. But it's about you having the best physique for you. And for the criteria, having top to bottom balance is very important. Having really good posing and presentation is important. Having adequate condition. Now, adequate condition is subjective in Australia sometimes. Sometimes you can get a little bit too hard for the criteria. It's debatable. But if you're working with a coach that you trust and your goal is to get a pro card, you know, objectively, you look at yourself and go, these are the things I need to do to take my physique to the next level. Speak about it with your coach and execute the game plan. And if you have a physique that's really well proportioned, top to bottom balance, really good presentation, posing, etc., you're going to fit the criteria, you know? So that is the criteria. So I would say that if people are like questioning, oh, you know, is the criteria changing? Look at it from the perspective of what is Maureen's weakest body part? Probably doesn't have one. So, okay, maybe you should do that with your physique first. Develop your physique where you've got no weak body parts, and then talk about criteria and all these other things, because you've probably got room to make improvements to your physique.
I think that's so important, because you're pretty much it's because a lot of people just think, like, they always think every year it's changing and the criteria stays the same. It's just whoever shows up on the day, and it's subjective to the judges judging that day as well. Like, they'll be like, oh, we like this look more. It's not all of a sudden it's a 180, you know. And I think when I watch the pro shows in like America and stuff, I'm like, these girls are so different, like in physique, structure. They all have the like similar conditioning, posing's all on point, and you just kind of like, what are you freaking picking? Like, you know, there's 30 girls up on stage. Like, what are you actually choosing? You know, to some extent, you know. And the top five, top six are generally the ones that already, like, you know, make it there. They have everything, the whole package, and it's just coming down to like genetics, like of the how the body and structure sits. Obviously, there are nuances, especially in like, you know, the condition and stuff. I'm not a bikini coach, so I definitely don't want to overstep here. But I do feel like, let's say for example, I want to give you a scenario. If let's say Maureen comes to Australia, like she's an amateur, let's say for example, she comes to Australia to compete, and everyone's not as conditioned as her. Do you think she'll still win? Honest,
not as conditioned as her.
Yeah, and yeah, with the judging that we have in, oh wait, I don't know if I should bring that up, but let's say with the judging we have in Australia, would she win? I just want to give a scenario, because I think people can. What do you think? Do you think she'll
if she's an unknown competitor,
yeah,
and she came to Australia,
yeah, and let's say she is, yeah,
no, I don't think so. And I know that sounds fucking retarded, and I'm going to get a lot of heat for that. But
no, I agree with you 100%. That's the reason why I asked you. Yeah.
And the reason is that she'd be considered too big, because in real life, she is freaking, guys, like, everyone's going, oh, she's tiny. Yeah, she's tiny. She's short. Yeah. She's fucking huge in the delts. If you look at the top four and tell me that she doesn't have, she's big. Okay. She's bigger than Ash K in the delts, even though Ash K is taller, right? She is probably bigger than Daraja in the delt, or at least the same. And they're both shorter competitors out of the top four. If you look at the top 10, Maureen's delt are capped. They're very, very big. Not only capped, but she's super wide. So if we're, for example, being told that there are competitors that, you know, might be a little bit too big, and if they're shorter competitors, if they don't have the density of Maureen, then I don't think it should be an issue with the judging, because it was an eye-opener, because you look at photos and go, oh, Maureen's actually a really nice flow, good aesthetics, etc. And then you see her in real life, and when she opens up that front pose, you're like, whoa, she's huge.
Where did that come from, eh?
And when I say huge, guys, it's from the context of, yes, she's tiny. Yes, she has a great proportion, smallest waist, but she has body parts that open up and that flare up. It's kind of like when you see Issa hit a front pose. Her V tape is insane. Maureen is like a short version of Issa. People don't see that, but yet it's like, you know, in 2000 and you know, when Issa won the Olympia, and they're like, oh, we're going away from the X. This is the whole narrative. We're going away from that really tapered Issa look. Guys, have a look at Maureen's front pose, right? Tell me that's not freaking Issa version 2.0, just in a shorter competitor. Yep. It's her tape is insane. She's got a lot of density. She's got a lot of size. Her glutes are crazy from the rear, like crazy density. But I think that it's possible. I can't speak for everyone, but in Australia, I think it would be interesting to see if Maureen would do well as an amateur competitor, not being unknown, having a different face, etc. Yeah. Because I've said this before, like someone like Sweeta, I've mentioned this many times, and everyone's like, oh, Troy's going on a rant, but it's facts. Sweeta was a competitor of mine that competed in season B. She did the New South Wales show. Sound like a dead horse, but just facts. We were told that she was too big in the delts, right? She's a short competitor, very comparable to Maureen. Guys, I can guarantee you, Maureen had bigger delts than Sweeta. She's a fucking junior. Right?
Yep.
This is context. So if our reigning Miss Olympia now, and by the way, even before she was Miss Olympia, she was second place. She was runner up at the Arnold Classic, right? And I would love for there to be due diligence with the judging panel. If you can't name the top 10 Olympians right now, off the spot, as I'm talking to you as a judge, do not judge Bikini. And if I actually said that and put people on the spot, they'd be like, oh, fuck, this guy's just got me now. And for the judges that might be listening to this, you're probably going to memorize it. That's fine. I'm going to ask you about the Arnold. I'm going to ask you about the different pro show results. There's always something that control you on, right? But do not judge Bikini if you're not taking an interest in it. Because if Sweeta, for example, is a perfect example, she was told she's too big in the delts, too big in the triceps. What? Like, have a look at Maureen, yo. Maureen. And Sweeta's very impressive. Maureen's more dense than Sweeta everywhere, not just in the delts, in the arms, in the glutes, in the quads, everywhere. More dense, more conditioned. So that just helps give perspective on my thoughts. And that's why I said, like, for someone like Sweeta, she's good to talk about because she's got such amazing, incredible potential, crazy small waist, insane taper, wasn't judged favorably. You know, there are some things that she can improve on with her physique, and that's the truth. And I look at it and go, okay, even though we didn't get a favorable decision, what are the things that could improve on? I could see the improvements. I won't say them on the podcast, but it's interesting that we're having a discussion regarding that. And I also feel like there's a problem in Australia where I do feel like that criticism isn't welcomed or feedback isn't welcomed with any type of judging. And I think we need to have an open discussion. And clearly there are professional athletes. Clearly there are coaches that have concerns with the judging standard. When there is consistency amongst us, when we're going, like, I went overseas. You went, the best thing about you, you went overseas. You saw Nicole compete. You know what these pros look like. You know
girls,
what the amateur
30 pros, bikinis, like, in person. I'm like, oh shit, there's a lot. And I sat through all of it because Nicole was one of my competitors. Yeah.
You know what they look like? You know what the amateurs look like over there, the standard, you know, and what they're rewarding as pro cards. Like, I was at the Amateur Olympia in Vegas. You know, the top three won, the overall won the pro cards. They were all shredded. They would all be too lean in Australia. Facts. Yep. All too lean, you know? And I know that wouldn't be judged. Like, they'd be judged favorably on their structure, their proportion, 100%, but too lean. You know, would that be enough to offset? You know, it's hard to put them in a situation, oh, Troy said this, like, it's a definite thing, without context, seeing who they're up against. Guys, you get my point. The point is that we're having a discussion about, you know, what is the standard, the conditioning that's, you know, acceptable in Australia, and also the size requirements that are acceptable. And if you go overseas and have a look at these competitors, like, you don't even have to be a coach. You don't have to be an athlete. You can just be a spectator, go and watch the Olympia, and you see this. And I was up very close and prejudging. I had very freaking good seats. So I saw every detail. I saw the level of conditioning they had in the legs, in the glutes, who was jiggling, who wasn't. I saw everything. And that's why Issa was pushed out to ninth, because she didn't have the glute hamstring conditioning, you know? Yeah. And Issa looked probably, in terms of her size, fullness, probably one of the better looks she's had, apart from that level of conditioning that she needed to tighten up on. So yeah, I do have there are some concerns, and the only way for us to move forward in the sport in a positive way, in my view, doesn't mean that I'm right, this is just my opinion, is we need to have judges that have a true passion in the sport for bikini, and not just go, oh, we need to get through these classes as quick as possible because bikini is not as cool as bodybuilding. I get it. I used to be one of those dudes that used to hate bikini, 100%. But that's why we need people that are passionate to judge bikini, that have an interest, that don't go, oh, I can't wait till the bikini girls get off. I'm not suggesting that's all judges, but I just think that we need to have some really passionate individuals who would love the responsibility to judge bikini, and we're going to see the sport grow because it's clearly growing overseas. And I think there's a major opportunity for it to grow in Australia. And, you know, there are some other federations, like, for example, the WBFF, who I think do it very, very well. You know, they give adequate stage time. They have a really good stage experience for the competitors. I think, again, we go into the criticism of we're better than this federation, da, 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 da. But WBFF, right? And I used to be highly critical of them. You got to give credit where it's due. They do a great job for the competitors, you know, and the judging is fairly consistent. So, you know, I'm a big fan of what they do, and it just goes to show you the potential. And the reason why I'm mentioning WBFF is because I'm seeing the WBFF numbers, the competitors grow. That organization is growing in Australia. It's doing very well, you know. So there's clearly a market for bikini in Australia. There's clearly an opportunity for growth. And I think in order for us to grow as a sport, we got to reflect and look at, okay, what are the things we can do to improve on? And that's what I do. As I mentioned, we're talking about self-improvement and reflection and taking constructive feedback, even if it's negative. Troy said this, judging, da-da-da-da-da. Or, you know, okay, let's just say I said the worst things imaginable. What can be taken out of what I'm saying apart from playing victim? You know, what is something that we can work on? And I want to see the sport grow. I love the sport. I think a lot of us coaches, you know, a lot of athletes love the sport, and we have the best intention for the sport. And creating discussion and difficult discussion is important. And I want to encourage anyone that's listening, if you have a problem with the judging or if you have concerns about anything regarding the federation, please give feedback. That's the only way that that's going to inspire change or create things or better opportunities. You know, we've got two pro cards for bikini, for example.
Yeah.
You know, we would love the opportunity for there to be more pro cards. We don't have a bikini pro show this year, which is unfortunate. I understand. But, you know, feedback is important because without feedback, you know, we're not going to do diddly shit. We're not going to change. There's nothing going to be implemented because they don't know. They only hear, oh, Troy said this again, you know, whereas there's an opportunity for other coaches to say certain things and have the honest conversation to give feedback. And there are, so I won't name names, but there are some really cool judges in this industry who take feedback, and they're legends, you know. And I don't want to single out certain judges and say, you know, I really like them because they take on feedback and, oh, he's talking about these judges, they're not the other ones, they're the bad ones, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So because there's always a problem, right, in saying things and not saying things. So there we go. Look at me. I could rant for hours.
Yeah, no, I love it. And I think, that's why I had to bring up the question. I think a lot of people have perspective. It's like, if Maureen came here, she would probably not win. Because like that's a good explanation to a lot of people that are probably listening to this podcast, that it's like, you know, it's the criteria doesn't change. It depends on where you're at. And hopefully we can move alongside, you know, with the international judging. I think that would be a huge factor. I always say that they should bring an international judge here just to help with the judging, to kind of move it forward, right? I think that would be a good approach, maybe. I'm not exactly sure. I always said, like, you know, it would be good to have someone here. I think like I've done a show in Singapore where they brought Sandy Williams there. And this wasn't a very kind of small show when Singapore had it. This was like about 2-3 years back. And they brought the before COVID and actually brought Sandy Williams there to actually judge, which I was that's pretty cool. Like, why can't Australia do this as well? Like, bringing someone that is from America to here to kind of help with the judging and direction of the sport.
Yeah, I love that. And this is another thing as well. And I will say this as well. I'm not Mr. Know-It-All with bikini, right? Because I've received feedback from ladies that have competed overseas for the pros. And I'm like, okay, they need to make those improvements. I didn't see that. Okay, cool. I've got to adapt, right? Because they have a different criteria. And I've got to ask feedback. Like, I'm not Mr. Know-It-All. I'm like, no, what does, you know, Alex need to improve? Alex got a feedback from Olympia. Cool. You know, what does Nay need to improve? Okay, cool. We're working on that. So I'm still learning what the standard is overseas, because that is not consistent with what we're seeing in Australia. So that's what I'm saying. And it's not from a place of, you know, I hate the IFBB. I love the IFBB. this is just what I'm seeing, and I want to give feedback so everyone can improve and people understand what's going on. Because if you compete in Australia and get one set of feedback, I've had competitors that have been told they're too lean in Australia. We've gone overseas and we've been too soft. And that, like, I won't, there's one competitor that comes to mind. And for the overseas show, we're 1 kilo lighter. So we're definitely a lot sharper, but we're still too soft overseas. Isn't that interesting? So that's why we have discrepancies in judging. That's why I'm saying there's a different standard overseas, because we're told one certain line of feedback. And then I go overseas with certain competitors and they're told a different thing. And I'm like, damn, we need to be tighter overseas, because that's what they're rewarding on the amateur level I'm talking about. And clearly the pros are a completely different level of what is required. And this is why, you know, the sport has an opportunity to grow, but we need to change with the times. And when we do reward physiques to the same caliber, to the same standard, we're raising the bar higher. We're saying the conditioning requirement, we're saying the size requirement is different. Therefore, we're going to produce better athletes. Therefore, we're going to have more bikini Olympians in Australia. 100%. We're not going to achieve that if our bar or standard is low. It's certainly not where it used to be. I'm not talking about that. Like, if we're talking about where we came from, before the split was low. Like, Tony Doherty did a great job for getting, you know, for obviously jumping on the pro league and supporting the pro league. That was the best thing that happened to bodybuilding. You know, Tony obviously was involved in that 100%. But I also still think there's an opportunity for us to grow further than that as well.
Yes. And I think, you know, I want to say, like, especially with bikini, it's one of those divisions, like in Australia, it is marked based on who stands there. So how a client does is going to be like, I don't even know, like, who you're going to stand next to. I can bring the criteria of what Olympia wants, like, you know, IBU pro league international. But in Australia, you have to be like, oh, well, if you're the most conditioned girl on stage and everyone else isn't in condition, they're going to probably mark you down for that. Like, it's like, do you feel like that's something that happens often? Or?
Yeah, so I think so. I think that when there is a level of conditioning that is unique to one competitor only, and then you have a lot of competitors that are out of shape too far the other way, that competitor that might be, let's say, just a smidge too lean, right, would be penalized, like, massively. Whereas the ladies that are not just a smidge too out of shape, they're really out of shape, 2, 3, or 4 kilos over stage weight, they're rewarded. No. So I think, like, it can't, I believe that, you know, if you're in really good condition, let's say you're a shade too lean, or let's argue it's 2 shades too lean, just a little bit more. If that competitor has all the other variables, the posing, the fullness, you know, everything else is so much closer to the criteria, but then we're rewarding someone that's 3 kilos over stage weight. I just can't deal with that. That doesn't happen overseas, because you would tell the judging standard overseas is, hey, listen, you're just slightly too lean, come in a bit softer. Like, for example, Nave placed top five at the Mile High Pro Show. And yeah, there was a Mile High Pro, top five, right? Yep. Issa was there. Ash K was there, top five. She was fifth. We were told that, hey, Nate, you're a little bit too lean. Still was top five. You know, wasn't in the last call out, wasn't in the second call out, was next to Ashley K and Issa. Hey, Nate, you're a bit too lean. Just come in a bit softer for the next show, which we did. And we ended up placing third, you know, the next show. So Nate wasn't penalized for being too lean, for a shade too lean or 2 shades too lean. We were given that for, hey, look, everything looks really good. Just come in a little bit softer and, you know, you're going to do better for the criteria. That's what we did. So I think, if someone is obviously in the mix, and clearly Nate's, you know, obviously the first proper season going overseas is not going to beat an Issa and Ash K. But my point is clear, you know, there is going to be a level of reward for a competitor who's in really good shape. And if they need to make a slight adjustment, then that's fine. They can make that slight adjustment and just get just a slight little bit softer. But that level of conditioning, in my opinion, should not offset a top placing or be put in the second call that, especially at the amateur level, because as amateurs, if you've got the density, you've got the flow, right? If the conditioning is a little bit too much, more often than not, 95% of the lineup is not in condition.
Yeah.
You know, so therefore you deserve to be in the first call out.
Yeah.
Just like as a blanket statement, you know. So clearly everything requires context, but I've seen some interesting decisions where I don't agree with the logic. You know, some people are cool to have a debate. And I really like that. And I like to hear the justification, but sometimes I don't see how decisions can be justified from my perspective, given what I see and how I look at the criteria. And I do understand it's subjective, but sometimes it's so clear.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that being said, Bikini is a hard division to judge, one of the hardest divisions out there, and it is honestly the biggest division in out of all the classes in, like, the IVB, ideally. Like, you know, so I think it requires a lot more care to really, like, you know, make sure the judging's on point, because you're going to have a lot of girls. And I know it's hard to judge that many girls. You can imagine, like, you know, trying to do their job the best they can, and I know it's hard, but it's one of those things that it does require a bit more care. So whether or not they get more judges, more feedback, that sort of stuff, it's always good for the sport, 100%.
Yeah, but check this, right? That I do think that, like, it was really an eye-opener for the Olympia, because I thought when there was 54 competitors, right? And I was like, this is going to be interesting to judge. They judged it pretty well.
Yep.
You know?
I think they have requirements. And, yeah.
And they have pro athletes. Amateurs are so much easier to judge than pro athletes. So much easier. It's very, very clear who's in the mix and who's not. Like, as soon as you walk out. And if you can judge, like, the third or fourth call out to Olympia was still deep, you know, for Bikini. So how can you, you know, as a judge, differentiate the third and fourth call out when you've just seen 50 fucking four competitors? Like, imagine having to organize everyone in call out, thinking, oh, we want this person, this call out, da, 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 while it's all happening live. So if the American judges are capable of that, to me, there is no excuse for any judge outside of America to have a problem with the amateur judging. I literally seen it firsthand what the Americans are capable of. They're very good judging. They handled it pretty well. There could be some debates of, oh, this person could have moved from the third to the second call out or whatever. I understand that, but pretty much it was pretty spot on judging, especially if you look at the top 10.
I think it's definitely experience as well. So obviously, like, having the best judges of obviously in the world for IVB there, judging, they all have, like, judged many shows. So I think, you know, as time goes on, they probably just keep evolving, and they know exactly, like, these are the people we look at. Like, whether they follow them on socials and be like, oh, these are the people we want automatically. I don't know. I always think about them, like, maybe they just, like, find the people they like, look at them on socials, kind of decide it and get an idea. And then that way they know all the competitors, you know?
Hey, I mean, I don't know what the solution is. Well, I do, but I don't want to say it because I'm not Mr. Know-it-all. The leader is good. The leader is great.
You know? Man, we're gonna do another podcast anyway, so let's try to wrap it up. It's been an hour and 40 minutes, I think. Pretty long, but I think we've got
talk so much.
Oh, mate, I enjoy listening. I'm enjoying this conversation we're having, and I can't wait to do one in person. So for the listeners, where can everyone find you?
So you can find me at Troy J Thornton, or if you're a local listener, you can see me. I'll be at the Pro League the Perth show. I'm actually looking forward to that one. Yeah. So that'll be awesome.
That's
to see.
That's the first show of the season, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, sweet. So I'll see you the first season then.
Yeah, 100%. So for anyone that wants to come say hello, or if you want to, like, I don't know, punch me in the face, feel free to come see me at the Perth show.
If you want to debate with him, just, you know, bring him some C4 and then you're good, you know?
Oh, they better have the C4. I'm ready, you know?
Yeah.
If I have the C4, ready. I'm...
we'll have, like, a massive table where everyone just comes and just argues with you. So, like, you know, we'll just have a table set up for you, like, you know, IPP probably. It's like, come,
yeah, it's like
Troy.
have you seen the Steven Crowder sign? It's like, he says a topic and he's like, change my mind. So it's kind of like that, like, you know, I
actually, I have seen that meme. Yeah, you needed one of those. But yeah, no, I'm super excited, man. I'll make sure to link your bio and everything, Troy J Thornton. I think there's a fake account of you as well on Instagram, which I did not notice. Like, I was messaging the wrong person. And also, Troy does have a podcast as well. So if you do have questions, I'm sure Troy will be more than happy to answer them as well. Easy, man.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Yes. I'm super excited to our next one. We are going to do an in-person one. So everyone look forward to that, where we will discuss Bikini in itself and the federation and the division. So thank you, Troy, for taking some time out today to do this podcast with us.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Thanks, bro.